Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giriwada Dhari. Shodha Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giriwada Dhari. Shodha Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giriwada Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parvajakacharya Asatara Sata Sri Sri Mata's Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Gaura Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 13, The Appearance of Lord Varaha, Text 29. Sa Vajra Kutanga Nipata Vega Vishirna Kukshahi Stanayan Udanvan Utrishta Dirgormi Bujair Ivartash Shukrosha Yageshvara Pahi Meti Savajra Kutanga Nipata Vega Vishirna Kukshi Stanayanu Danvan Utrishta Dir Gormi Bujar Ivartash Shukrosha Jageshvara Pahimeti Savajra Kutanga Nipata Vega Vishirna Kukshi Stanayanu Danvan Utrishta Dir Gormi Bujar Ivartash Shukrosha Yageshvara Pahimeti Savajra Kutanga Nipata Vega Vishirna Kukshi Stanayanu Danvan Utrishta Dir Gormi Bujar Ivartash Shukrosha Yageshvara Pahimeti Savajra Kutanga Nipata Vega Vishina Kukshi Suryanu Danvan Shirna Kukshi Sanayanu Danvan Krishna Sir Gormi Bhujari Bhartas Kosha Yagetai Meti Savajra Kutanga Nipata Vega Vishirna Kukshi Stanayanu Danvan Vishrista Dir Gormi Bujari Vartash Shukrosha Yageshwara Pahimeti Vaishnavis Savajra Kutanga Sapata Vega Vishirna Kukshi Stanayanu Danvan Vishrista Dir Gormi Bujari Vartas Sakosha Yegeshvara Pahimeti Savajra Kutanga Nipata Vega Vishirna Kukshi Stanayanu Danvan Shishadir Gormi Bujaravijatash Kosha Yageshvara Pahimeti Savajra Kutanga Nipata Vega Vishirna Kukshi Stanayanu Danvan Shukrosha Yageshvara Pahimeti Saha That Vajrakuta Anga. Body like a great mountain. Nipatata Vega. Nipata Vega. The force of diving. Vishirna. Bifurcating. Kukshahi. The middle portion. Stanayan. Resounding like. Udanvan. The ocean. Uchrista. Creating. Dirga. High. Urmi. Waves. Bujahai. By the arms. Eva Artaha. Like a distressed person. Chukrosha. Prayed loudly. Yajna Ishvara. O master of all sacrifices. Pahi. Please protect. Ma. Unto me. Iti. Thus. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. Diving into the water like a giant mountain, Lord Bor divided the middle of the ocean, and two high waves appeared as the arms of the ocean, which cried loudly as if praying to the Lord. O Lord of all sacrifices, please do not cut me in two. Kindly give me protection. Purport. Even the great ocean was perturbed by the falling of the mountain-like body of the transcendental boar, and it appeared to be frightened as if death were imminent. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So here, Lord Bor, Lord Varaha, is entering the ocean with a big splash, and the water of the ocean rose up in two arms, like a person in distress, praying, as if afraid. So tomorrow is officially Ram Navami, right? So Lord Ramachandra also scared the ocean. You know, he was desiring to cross the ocean to go to Lanka, where Ravana had his kidnapped wife, Sita. And he wanted the assistance of the ocean. So he called, when he got to the shore with his army of vanaras, monkey soldiers, and wanted to cross over and give battle to Ravan and all his forces, the ocean didn't immediately come. So he glanced at the ocean waters, and his glance heated everything up. So the ocean, personified ocean, came and asked forgiveness and cooperated with his desire, and he crossed over with his army of monkey soldiers and with his brother Lakshman and some others to rescue Sita from the kingdom of Lanka, kingdom of Ravana and Lanka. So the ocean like everything else in the whole cosmos, is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ishvara Parama Krishna. Krishna is the supreme controller. No one is superior to him. And actually, it's stated in the Bhagavatam in a few places that everything happens out of fear on the material level of reality, out of fear of Krishna, the wind blows, out of fear of Krishna, the sun shines. Ekaleshvara Krishna Arasabha Britya. There's one supreme controller, Krishna. Everything else is every other personality who may be in charge of different material elements is his servant. So, Lord Varaha comes up in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. Once Lord Chaitanya was at the home of Murari Gupta, according to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he was feeling the ecstasy of Lord Varaha, of being Varaha. So he kind of entered into a transcendental state of being the Varaha avatar. And he started calling out, Shukara, Shukara, means the boar, the boar. And there was a pot, an earthen pot, somewhere in the vicinity of him, and he picked it up. So he was imitating or reenacting the pastime of Lord Varaha, lifting up the earth from the waters of the Garbhadak ocean where it had been submerged. And you know, there are two manifestations of Varaha. One at the beginning of creation, it's called the Sveta Varaha, the white Varaha. And then another that appeared to kill Hiranyaksha later in the Chakshusha Manvantar. He's called the Lal Varaha or the Rakta Varaha, the red Varaha. So Lord Chaitanya, during his tour of South India, visited a place called Vridha Loka, and there he visited and took darshan of this a deity of Sveta Varaha. And we can also find in Mathura Vrindavan temples of the Sveta Varaha and the Rakta Varaha. One of the temples is the one that houses the reddish Varaha is located in Mathura. It's called the Adi Varaha Temple. I visited it once. Actually, there are two temples in Mathura. There's one for Sveta Varaha and another for the Rakta Varaha, and I visited both of them. The Adi Varaha Temple, which, as I said, is the one that houses the Rakta Varaha deity, has an interesting history. According to the Adi Varaha Purana, the deity of Varaha was originally manifested from the mind of Lord Kapila, and it was given to the demigod Indra to worship. And then Ravan later, when he conquered, you know, the heavenly kingdom of Indra, he took this deity, this Varaha deity, to Lanka. And then when Ram defeated, killed Ravan, Ravan's brother Vibhishana, who was friendly to Lord Ram, said, "I'll give you anything you like." And Ram said, "I don't want anything except that Varaha deity." So he took it back to Ayodhya and worshipped it there for some time. And then one of Ram's brothers, Shatrughna, was sent to Mathura to kill some demons. If you go to, I think it was the demon Madhu. If you go to Madhavan Forest, you can see the place where that happened. But at that time, he brought the Varaha deity to Mathura, and it was installed there. So these accounts of the different avatars, different incarnations of Krishna are very pleasing to the devotees. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvaha tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mam eti sarjana." That Krishna's appearance and his lila, his activities, his work are transcendental, they're totally spiritual. And if one understands them in full, then one is qualified to enter into Krishna's abode, into Krishna's nitya lila, as one of his eternal associates. And that's what we should all be aspiring for. And just hearing about these things is in itself pious activity. Pious in the sense of being transcendental and leading towards the ultimate spiritual goal. So we're hearing about the Garbhodak Ocean here. That is a different kind of ocean than the ocean that's there down the road at Venice Beach. But even that ocean has great power. I mean, Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles was once pointing out that it's only by Krishna's desire that the ocean stays within its limits. Otherwise, the place would be flooded. Like sometimes we see tsunamis, you know, in Japan, other parts of the world, where the ocean, which normally is keeping to its boundary, overfloods the land. So these things happened a long time ago. The events of this chapter, the appearance of Lord Varaha in the very beginning, took place a long time ago during the time of Swayambhuva Manu. Because the chapter starts out with Swayambhuva Manu, who was manifested from Lord Brahma. He's asking, what can I do? What is my service? And he's informed that his service is to manifest the population of the universe, of, including this planet. And he was saying, well, it's unfortunately, the Earth system, Bhumandala, it's under the water. So from the nostril of Lord Brahma comes this transcendental incarnation of the Varaha avatar. So that took place a long, long time ago, at a time when most scientists today believe there were no intelligent life forms, conscious life forms in the universe anywhere, what to speak of on this planet. But, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam is giving us information that at the very beginning of creation, there are intelligent, conscious beings guiding everything that's happening. So, I mean, recently I was in Mayapur, and they have some very old temples there. It was on the Parikrama. Actually, I wasn't planning on going on the Parikrama. I was planning on being back here in L.A. around February 20th. And now it's... So I actually returned on the 22nd of March because I had a little accident on the way to Mayapur. And I got a fractured collarbone, I found out, when I got to Mayapur. So to kind of let it heal a little bit, I wound up staying a month longer in Mayapur than I originally planned. And I think that was Krishna's arrangement, because normally when I go to Mayapur, I go for the GBC meetings, meetings of different committees that I'm part of. You know, some people kind of point out that our life is eating, meeting, sleeping, and defending. So I normally wouldn't be there for the Parikrama or Gaur Purnim. I guess Lord Chaitanya wanted to reorder my priorities. And so I wound up staying an extra month there and went on Parikrama. Not like the really stalwart devotees who stay out all night and camp. You know, devotees in my category, the more elderly types, we go from the temple each day to wherever the Parikrama is going. But one of the places we saw was the Suvarna Vihar Temple, which is located across the Jalangi River from the ISKCON Mayapur property, which has the Temple of Vedic Planetarium now, which is visible for miles away. But the Suvarna Vihar Temple is called the Satya Yuga Temple. You know, they have pieces of temple structure. You know, of course, the temple that's there now was built fairly recently, but you know, they have remains of what they call the Satya Yuga temple that was there. There was a king living there who desired to experience the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, which were far in the future. So he was given a benediction that eventually he would take birth as Buddhimanta Khan and take part in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya's Leela when they eventually took place. But Satya Yuga was 3 or 4 million years ago, you know, according to the Vedic understanding. And at that time, there shouldn't have been, according to modern science, no human beings whatsoever. Or nothing like that. So this is part of our Vedic understanding that the universe actually has a purpose. And the purpose is to allow souls that are currently not qualified to exist in the spiritual world the chance to qualify themselves if they so desire. And actually they have two choices. Krishna explains that there have always been these two types of living entities in the universe, Daivasura, those who are Daiva, those who are trying to qualify themselves to be engaged in Krishna's eternal lila, and those who aren't, who are trying to become independent enjoyers of material resources. So those two are always there. And if and that means the human form of life has to have always been available, because it's in the human form of life that we can actually appreciate and understand the choice that we have and try to make the right choices. And Krishna promises to help such people. He promises to keep an arrangement such that that opportunity is always available to the conditioned souls. Parachanaya sadhanam vinashya chujushkritam says, I'll always help the devotees of the Lord, and I'll kind of keep the others under control. Which he ultimately does. And to accomplish that, he comes in various forms and incarnations, including Lord Varaha, who we learn in these chapters is the personified Vedas. And in the Shastras, it explains that the Vedas ultimately come from the breath of Lord Narayan, ultimately Krishna. So it's kind of interesting that Varaha emerged from the nostril with the breath of Lord Brahma. So the... So those are a few thoughts about this verse, and very short but meaningful purport by Srila Prabhupada. So any questions or comments? Bhagavati Prabhu?
Thank you, Prabhu, for a very interesting class. My question is that in the Vedic picture of reality, are all forces of nature personal? Because, like, for instance, in today's text and purport, it's talking about how the ocean was afraid that it was going to be split by Varaha. So fear is an emotion. It's experienced by persons. You know, it seems like from that the ocean is more than just a body of water. Like, it's more like the ocean has a body of water. I mean, you also mentioned about how the wind is moving in fear of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what is the way to understand that?
Well, ultimately, everything is controlled by personalities. So just like in the case of Lord Ramachandra, when he was upset that the ocean wasn't cooperating with him, and it started heating up. The personality in charge of the ocean actually came, asked for forgiveness. So there are personalities, you know, behind everything ultimately. Like if you carefully study the account of creation, you know, the creation of different elements in the universe. First there's the Mahatattva, which is when it's glanced at by Mahavishnu, it differentiates into the different elements, and then the elements actually manifest one after the other in connection with false ego. And as they're manifested, the element is manifested, its sense object is manifested, the sense that perceives it is manifested, and the demigod that controls the sense and the element and everything else is also manifest. Personality is involved in every level of perception and existence of the elements, even just the very elements of creation, you know, even before, you know, the different creatures like ourselves are manifested. There are higher personalities associated with the elements and the senses that perceive them. It's kind of an amazing thing when you think about it. The Vedic universe is a consciousness-based universe. Begins with Krishna, aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate. Everything comes from me, a conscious, intelligent person, actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And why does the universe exist? Well, because there are some souls that need an alternative reality to perceive and act in, and therefore, right from the beginning, perception and consciousness are involved. You know, I was thinking about it the other day, that according to material science, you know, everything, it's matter only. So in the beginning, they talk about in the beginning it was this, it was that. But according to them, I mean, how do they know? There was nothing, according to their theory, there was nothing conscious then existing to experience anything. I mean, and then somehow or other they think that the unconscious elements that were produced somehow or other had properties such that when conscious, intelligent beings capable of perceiving things did somehow or other come into existence billions of years later, that they were able to have five senses, five sense objects, they were able to have taste, smell, touch, that the elements that just supposedly were randomly existing somehow or other in the beginning of that dark, unconscious state of the universe were capable of producing sight, sound, taste, touch. What am I missing? Smell. Everything is ultimately connected with personality, consciousness, intention. I mean, the demoniac mentality is asatyam apratishtam te jagat ahur anishvaram. Everything is just matter. There's no controller. There's no purpose. Do what you want to do.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, there was somebody back there. My eyes are not very good. I can't see who that was.
I was just wondering, in this particular pastime of Varaha, is this a continuous pastime going on and on, eternally?
Well, I'd have to look through. I mean, there's lists given of the different types of avatars, the Vaibhava Prakashas, and all of that. I think it's one of the ones that perpetually exists and has a Vaikuntha planet and these different Leela.
That was going to be my next question. Does he have a planet?
But I can't give you a quotation from Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu that confirms that. It's just my sense that in the past I have read somewhere or heard from some bona fide source, but we'll have to put that on pause unless somebody has some direct reference. Anybody have any direct reference for this?
Okay. Just to substantiate that, in the question that Savas asked, we also hear that there are, for example, in the Krishna book, the pastimes of Putana, and then there are other statements in which the way she comes, it comes in different ways. Sometimes it's described that she comes as a beautiful woman, or in a different way too. So this is my personal understanding, I'm sorry to say that all these different pastimes doesn't necessarily mean to be exactly the same in the same way, but the teaching is the same of Krishna being the supreme and what is the purpose for us to understand. But there are also different barajas, I understand. Maybe you know more about this. There are three different or four different barajas. You know, you mentioned the Shweta Varaha, the white, and then the red one.
Yeah.
And there's other ones too. So when you read that, you know, in my readings also, I've seen that it's slightly different. It's not exactly the same as far as personalities or the way it happened. It's not like exactly a repetition, like a cloning.
Yeah, so the question basically is, is Varaha always lifting the earth up at the beginning of the creation, or always killing Hiranyaksha, you know, like that? That's the question. So, go ahead, Prabhu.
Thank you very much for the nice class. So you were mentioning that there are two Varahas, Varaha incarnation. One is white in color, another is red in color. But usually we are talking about the Varaha with red in color, who is fighting with Hiranyaksha.
Yeah.
So is there any reason why we are not talking about the white one so often?
I don't know the exact reason, but the reddish one appears in the Chakshusha Manvantar. So it's kind of closer to us in time, and it's connected with this other pastime of, you know, Jai and Vijay falling, you know, becoming Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, which is connected with Prahlad. So maybe it's because there are more connections with different personalities that we're familiar with. But yeah, that's just personal speculation.
Thank you.
Okay, one more.
Krishna. So in this section of the Bhagavatam, I've noticed that there's different Sanskrit words that Prabhupada translates as earth, and a couple of them are similar to, it's like Bhu or Bhu Mandala or something similar, some similar phrase. And I also heard from Sariputta Prabhu, he was giving a class on this section. He was explaining that Varaha didn't necessarily lift this specific earth globe that we're sitting on right now, but he lifted Bhumandala. So if that is the case, I'm wondering if there were, let's say there were humans on earth, this earth globe at that time, would they have experienced that Bhumandala had submerged in water or and got lifted by Varaha, or would that be like higher dimensional and maybe they didn't even know that happened? Just like there's Mount Meru that we're not able to see, but supposedly according to Bhagavatam, it's so big we should be able to see that if we had the eyes to see it. Is my question clear?
Well, there's a lot involved in the question. But one thing I would point out is that Swayambhuva Manu, his task is, as one of the Prajapatis, to generate populations. And he's not able to do that because the area he's supposed to populate, Bhumandala, is under the water. So that's why, you know, Varaha comes to lift it out of the water. When I was giving the class, I was careful not to say human beings. I said there were intelligent, conscious, living entities in the universe. I didn't say human beings on this earth, globe, planet. So that comes at some, after, if we're talking about these events of the Sveta Varaha or this first Varaha that appears at the very beginning of creation, that would be before, in other words, the Bhumandala, which we're part of, which, yeah, what we call Bharata Varsha, which used to mean the whole planet. It's part of Bhumandala. It's part of Jambudweep, which is the central island. And so that's one thing. And then another thing is, you said a lot of things about Mount Meru we couldn't see. And I mean, there are lots of things that we can't see that are real, but we're not capable of perceiving. Like, you know, if I go to Mayapur or Vrindavan and I see certain things, if Rupa Goswami or some other greatly advanced soul goes, they may see other things. They may see these elaborate gardens and palaces and residences of different gopis and residents of Vrindavan. They may see something entirely different than I perceive. I may just be noticing the hogs and the dogs walking in the muddy streets of the level of Vrindavan that I can perceive. That doesn't mean that the Vrindavan that really exists isn't there because I can't see it. It just means I'm not qualified to see it. Yeah, so go ahead. So
putting both your things, statements together, does that mean that this pastime took place before there was human population in the universe, or there was human population in the universe, but it happened in a higher dimension, so therefore it just, you know, we're not aware of it because it's just something beyond our perception? Or both or something.
What I was saying is there were conscious, intelligent personalities there. Brahma, for one, and Swayambhuva Manu for another. You know, the word human in terms of Vedic cosmology may include a broader spectrum of beings than we're familiar with if we just stick to the modern scientific view that were an accident of evolution by natural selection that appeared within the past 300,000 years. No,
but they weren't around either, those beings. As you kind of are clarifying for me, it was just Brahma, Swayambhuva. At that point, it's just Brahma and Swayambhuva Manu. And he's complaining that the whole Bhumandala is dipped into the Garbhodak Ocean. How am I supposed to populate the place?
Yeah, how am I supposed to populate it?
Right.
I
mean, okay.
At least that's how I read it. To familiarize myself, I read the chapter up to this point this morning, and that's what it's in. It starts out with Swayambhuva Manu praying to Lord Brahma, you know, about his ability to perform his duty, right, which is to populate the universe. And okay, so I think we've gone way over time here. So we'll stop. Thank you. Glories to Srila Prabhupada. Glories to Srila.